Blog Talk Radio.
Con los terroristas.
Hello and welcome to Sports Kingdom. I'm your host, King Julian. I'm here with, as always, the doctor, Sean Elmer. Sean, how's it going?
I'm doing good. I'm ready for the show.
So am I. And we also have another person on the line. He goes by the name of Maxwell Ogden. You can follow him on Twitter at Maxwell Ogden. He's from Bleacher Report and Sheridan Hoops. Please welcome Max. Max, how's it going today?
Not bad. How are you?
Not bad myself. We got a very good show today. I just want to first point out to our listeners, you can call into the show today by dialing 646-716-5733. And if you choose to dial into the show today, we are giving you the option to initiate debatable topic of your choice. So try calling in today as we got 60 minutes live on the air. It's going to be a nice show today. The email to this show is skbtradio@gmail.com. The chat room is open. And with that, I want to get started right away by talking about the latest breaking news, Wes Welker to the Denver Broncos. I was quite shocked as... apparently, the New England Patriots let Wes Welker off the hook. I got to first ask you, Sean, but what do you think about Wes Welker? I mean, is this really shocking for the Denver Broncos? He's now going to be paired up with Manning, one of the greatest of all time, instead of Tom Brady.
Yeah, I'm very surprised. I mean, you know, if you're New England, you're letting go of one of your premier third down go-to wide receivers. And it's Tom Brady, you know, I thought, you know, for one, he would put in a bigger say. And, you know, because think about it, Welker's now paired up with his, you know, arch nemesis in the AFC, if you want to say it, in Peyton Manning out in Denver. So that just makes Denver all that much better of a team with that acquisition. So, wow. Denver just jumped up huge. They just became a huge favorite in the AFC, let me tell you, by signing, by getting Wes Welker.
Yeah, totally. I got to go to you, Max. But, Max, not only does Peyton Manning now have Jacob Tammy, Demaryius Thomas, Eric Decker, but he now has Wes Welker. Tell me, what do you think of Wes Welker now going to the Denver Broncos?
I mean, first and foremost, Tom Brady has already supposedly lashed out. He's furious about this. He was, quote-unquote, disgusted at the offer that the Patriots gave to Wes Welker. Now, for those of you who are unfamiliar with Wes Welker, which is barely anybody, but Wes Welker, during the first 2 weeks of last season, was basically locked out of games in the sense that the Patriots were not throwing the ball his way as a way to more or less protest the fact that he wanted a bigger contract. Wes Welker still finished the season with 118 catches. What did Peyton Manning just get? Peyton Manning just got the best possession receiver in the NFL. You can call him a slot guy if you want to. By position, that's what he is. The fact of the matter is, Wes Welker picks up yards and he picks up first downs. Eric Decker, great rising wide receiver. Demaryius Thomas, one of the best downfield threats in the NFL already. And both of those guys have... the sky is the limit. the fact of the matter is the Denver Broncos just became the best team in the AFC by getting Wes Welker. Peyton Manning, you could put Peyton Manning with a bunch of paper bags and he would still throw for 4,000 yards and get you into the playoffs. We learned that when he was in Indianapolis. But now he has a quality defense led by Von Miller, and he has the best possession receiver in the game in Wes Welker. Sure hands. And all you're going to see now is Peyton Manning have an easier time. The biggest problem for Peyton Manning last year in Denver, at least for the first half of the season and in the playoffs, was, you know, when he needed to get the ball out quick, his check down options weren't really that great. Why does Tom Brady never get hit in New England? It's not just because of that offensive line. It's because Wes Welker gets open in a matter of seconds. And when he's wide open in space, in places that defenses didn't think players could fit into, he gets first down yardage, not just a check down for 2 or 3 yards. So suddenly the best quarterback in the NFL, one of the greatest quarterbacks in the history of the league, just got the most lethal wide receiver option outside of maybe Calvin Johnson. I mean, what more is there to say? The Broncos have the best offense in the AFC now, and the Patriots, don't sleep on Julian Edelman. The guy can fill in, but Wes Welker, there's a reason he leads the league in catches almost every single year.
This probably just made the Denver Broncos a whole lot better, a whole lot better. And just like Max said, but this really just solidified the Denver Broncos as the number one team in the AFC right now. Right now. And I got to initiate a debatable topic myself, but do you think the Denver Broncos can go to the Super Bowl now with Wes Welker, Demaryius Thomas, Peyton Manning, Von Miller? I mean, they just got a whole bunch of talent. Like, just tell me, Mac, do you think the Denver Broncos now have even more high chances at going to the Super Bowl next year?
I mean, how close were they last year? They were only 2 games away. They had one of the best records in the NFL. They're playing in what's probably the weakest division in all of football in the AFC West. I mean, this is a team that, you know, if you look at a majority of their losses came during the first half of the season. Almost all of their losses did, actually. So you take away their early season struggles, and suddenly you have a team that is looking at 13-14 wins. So they have home field advantage throughout the playoffs. Let's be realistic about that. We know that the Patriots are still going to be great. Wes Welker, phenomenal player, but you're talking about Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. They're going to be fine. But, you know, the Broncos really have a chance to compete for the number one seed in the AFC. And with that, you also have to think about Denver is not your average home field city. Denver is the type of place where Ryan Clark of the Pittsburgh Steelers can't play. So if they draw the Pittsburgh Steelers next year, they have a significant advantage. And they play every single game at home if it pans out the way we expect it. Now, and beyond all of this, The Broncos not only got better by adding a veteran receiver in Wes Welker, who has been to the Super Bowl, might we add, but they're such a young team. You know, we think about Champ Bailey and we think about Peyton Manning because they're the face of the franchise. Von Miller is only entering his third year in the league. Same could be said for Demaryius Thomas, for Eric Decker. You're talking about the best players on the team outside of Manning and Champ Bailey are under 25 years old. So what's happening is the Broncos are coming into their prime, while at the same time you have one of the greatest field generals in NFL history finally learning the patterns and the traits of his receivers. So everything is coming together. It's the perfect storm. So can they make it to the Super Bowl? Obviously, free agency, everything has to pan out. The draft has to pan out. But if everything happened today, the Broncos are the best team in the AFC. So, yes, they can make it to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, how about you, Sean?
I mean, yes, me. I think the Broncos, unless injuries play a part in it, and we all know they could, but yes, me, with that acquisition of Wes Welker, I think the Broncos are going to be, once again, with Peyton Manning and Welker on the same team, they're going to be a heavy favorite to reach the Super Bowl 48 in New York, New Jersey at MetLife Stadium.
Yeah, I just want to say this. If you look at the AFC right now, on paper, there is no team right now that could be compared to the Denver Broncos because they, I feel, are just so superior right now with who they have. If you look at Baltimore, they just yesterday let go Ellerby. He's now with the Miami Dolphins. So did Paul Kruger leave from the Baltimore Ravens. He decided to sign with the Cleveland Browns. Now you could see that the Baltimore Ravens are going to go into a transition period where they're going to be starting to develop players through the draft. So you really can't count on Baltimore next year, nor can't you count on New England now, since New England, they have one of the best in NFL history, Tom Brady, but Tom Brady, he didn't really capitalize last year in the postseason, and the team has just now gone a little bit low talent-wise, but I think New England, there's still plenty of time left. Free agency has only started. I think New England can go out and find other receivers. They have some interest in Danny Amendola from the St. Louis Rams from some sources. So, I want to ask you, Sean, but do you think Danny Amendola might be a nice replacement for Wes Welker, since now Welker is no longer with the team?
He's not, I'll say this, on paper, he's not the caliber of type player that Wes Welker is. So I will say this, if the Patriots were to sign Amendola he has giant shoes to fill to replace Wes Welker. Amendola is no Wes Welker. For years, Wes Welker has been the Tom Brady's go-to third down man. So, I'm not saying Amendola can't do it. I'm just saying that he's not the caliber of player that Wes Welker is, in my mind.
Yeah, most definitely. I just don't see why both sides couldn't get a deal done. I just didn't know why. And Robert Kraft went on to say just yesterday that he wanted Wes Welker to retire as a New England Patriot. The Wes Welker is only 31 years old still. And, man, since he is now with another legendary quarterback within the name of Manning, he's just going to do much better things on other teams. So I got to ask you, Mac, Danny Amendola might be a nice solution, or do you just think that the New England Patriots took a blow here?
I don't think that it's fair to compare Danny Amendola to Wes Welker. Nobody ever wants to touch on this, but let's touch on the elephant in the room. Danny Amendola couldn't stay healthy if you paid him five times the money you currently pay him. The guy is an incredible player when he's on the field, and he honestly sometimes, I don't think he does, but sometimes he'll rival Wes Welker with what he can do. The issue is he gets injured almost every single year. And Wes Welker, you could say that he's small, you could say that he is bound to take hits, but you know what? The guy is pretty durable. So that's one thing that we have to touch on. The second thing is people really outside of New England really don't understand how dominant of a player Wes Welker is. He might be small, but there's a reason, everyone's looking at Calvin Johnson and these monster catches and these touchdowns. Wes Welker, there's a reason he has he leads the league in receptions almost every single year. And it's not just Tom Brady. And even if he goes to Denver and it doesn't pan out, that doesn't mean New England didn't lose anything. The fact of the matter is this. New England lost their best wide receiver. Brandon Lloyd is a good player, but everybody's been questioning his character. Randy Moss is long gone. I mean, Gronk is playing incredible when he's playing, but he's been injury prone the past two seasons. Same with Aaron Hernandez. So you're looking at a guy in Wes Welker who leads the league in receptions, who picks up a first down almost every time he gets the ball, who the second you snap it, he already knows where to go, where to find the seam in the defense that no other receiver in the league can find. And, you know, Welker isn't just some other guy, some good slot receiver who gets a lot of catches. He is elite, and elite is a word that is thrown around far too often. The fact of the matter is this. Wes Welker might not be the guy who lines up outside of the tackles, but in terms of production, in terms of impact on a team, he's right up there with Calvin Johnson, Larry Fitzgerald, and Andre Johnson is one of the best in the league. You can argue with me all you want to, but the numbers don't lie. Without Wes Welker, the New England Patriots don't make it to the Super Bowl. Without Wes Welker, the New England Patriots don't make it to the AFC Championship last year. The guy knows how to move the chains. He knows how to find the holes in the defense. And Danny Amendola, he might step in. He might be good. Julian Edelman is going to be a good player. The fact of the matter is this. Wes Welker is a one-of-a-kind player in the NFL right now. We haven't seen another like him yet. And as far as I'm concerned, there isn't another one in the NFL currently that can do what he does.
Yeah, most definitely. And I thought Wes Welker was a nice wide receiver when he played with the Miami Dolphins as well to start off his career back in 2005. I think Wes Welker now going to his fourth team in the NFL, he's just going to prove that he could still play a full season and put up over 1,000 receiving yards. It's just that simple. Danny Amendola, just like Max was alluding to, he gets injured quite frequently. So that may be a major concern, but who knows what's in Danny Amendola's future, because he's only 27 years old and he could really, I think, any guy could really pair up with one hell of a great in Tom Brady. If you want to join in the conversation, you can call in now by dialing 646-716-5733. Once again, it's 646-716-5733. Now, I also want to ask you guys this, but was there anything else you wanted to talk about concerning NFL free agency so far?
Well, I have something that I'd like to bring up.
What's that?
I was going to bring up from what I hear that Darrell Revis might be heading, even though he's not a free agent, but I'm just bringing it up. The Eagles were rumored to be getting him, but he's now, from what I'm hearing, heading to Tampa Bay. So how about that? I find that somewhat surprising. What do you think, Julie?
Well, I don't know. It's a tough call because, you see, I can tell that Greg Schiano wants to improve his secondary over in Tampa Bay. As you see, he's been reaching out to Deshaun Goldson and Darrell Revis. And, in fact, I haven't heard that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers sent a private jet all the way to California just for Deshaun Goldson to ride in it all the way to Tampa Bay. That just shows how much they really desire having a guy like Deshaun Goldson and Darrell Revis. I think Tampa Bay, they're going to now, I think, part ways with Rondae Barber and all. So, I don't know. And they also got rid of Aqib Talib, as you all may remember. He got traded to the New England Patriots just last year, and now he's become a free agent. So, I don't know. I think Tampa Bay is one team that can definitely improve their secondary, and they got, I think, a lot of nice things going on right now over there with Doug Martin, Josh Freeman, and new coach Greg Schiano. So, I'm going to let Mac take it from here?
I mean, that's obviously a move worth monitoring. Tampa Bay, it was the same story this season as it was last season. Yeah, they started out well, but then they just kind of crumbled down the stretch. But they obviously have a young core in place that, at least offensively, is worth noting. You know, they have Josh Freeman, who had a nice bounce back season after struggling in his sophomore year. Doug Martin, you can make a case that he was the rookie of the year. And then obviously you have Vincent Jackson and Mike Williams on the outside. But defensively, you know, they struggled against the pass. They were dead last in opponent passing yards, but they were first in opponent rushing yards. So, you know, you can see that this is a team that has the players in place to make an impact. You know, up the middle with guys like Mason Foster and Jared McCoy. Yeah, at linebacker on the defensive line, I think they're doing pretty well for themselves. They could obviously stand to improve in certain areas, but, you know, Mark Barron's a nice, strong safety to have. He looks like he's going to be very good for the future. But Rondae Barber is, you know, he's, what, 37, turning 38 years old in April? You know, the future, you have to think towards the future. You can't just think about what a guy's been doing for your organization over the years, because you have a young defense that needs to grow and needs to flourish. I think a guy like Golston is the ideal fit. You know, it was a bigger contract than I thought he would get, but I think he's the ideal fit.
Yeah. And like you were saying, though, Max, you can't always look toward the past, because – more importantly, you got to look at how this certain player can help you out getting into the near future. Darrell Revis, he came off a very severe injury last year, so people are going to be questioning whether Darrell Revis, who is at 27 years of age, is going to still be the Darrell Revis he once was. Then also, I actually want to refer back to what Max was saying about Mark Barron. I was one of the guys who I actually didn't mention. I think Mark Barron, who they just drafted last year, he's another quality defensive player who is going to turn out to be very, very bright in Tampa Bay's future. And so if Deshaun Golston decides to come along in Tampa Bay with Mark Barron, and who knows, maybe Darrell Revis, then I think it could work out. But is there anything else you guys want to mention about free agency before we move on?
One more thing, Julian. How would you rate what the Eagles have done so far in free agency? With the acquisition of, or the signing, should I say, of Patrick Chung. What are your thoughts on that? I actually like the signing.
Well, as all of you may know, we have an affiliate show called Affiliate Kingdom, which you can catch randomly on weekdays. So that's another time for discussion, I feel, Sean. So I'm just going to hold off on that. But maximum potential. Well, I guess not then. So moving on to Joe Flacco. This has been an interesting, debatable topic I've totally wanted to get on for quite some time. You know, as you all may know, or most of you know by now, that Joe Flacco is he is now officially the highest-paid player in the NFL, highest-paid NFL player in history. And so I want to ask you, starting off with Max, do you think there's any other quarterback in the NFL right now besides Joe Flacco who deserves to have the biggest contract in NFL history?
I think there are countless other quarterbacks who deserve to have the biggest quarterback contract in NFL history. Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, You could even say Ben Roethlisberger, who is in the same division and has won 2 Super Bowl rings. I mean, look, Flacco, he earned a big contract by winning the Super Bowl, and that's all fine and well. I think we all agree that he's one of the top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL. But for me, you know, if you're talking about who deserves the biggest contract, I don't only look at what happens on the field. I look about what type of revenue are you generating for your franchise and for the league. And if you're talking about that, it's really 3 people, and that's Aaron Rodgers, Peyton Manning, and Tom Brady. They're the most marketable faces in the league. You could throw Drew Brees in there. And, you know, the production speaks for itself. You know, I know everyone's going to say, oh, well, Manning has the same amount of rings as Flacco, but you can never even attempt to compare what Peyton Manning has done for the NFL, even just last season, compared to what Flacco has done. I mean, it's great that he got his money, but, you know, I said it before and I'll say it again, the Ravens aren't even going to make the playoffs this year.
Yeah, I'm just having a strong feeling that now the Ravens, just like I mentioned before, are just going to be now developing through the draft since Paul Kruger's gone, Elfrey's gone, Ray Lewis is gone, Ed Reed may possibly be gone. So as it all stands right now, there's going to be a lot of pressure leading into the season for Joe Flacco. But if you had to ask me on who I think should be paid the biggest contract in NFL history besides Joe Flacco, well, it's so obvious. I think a guy in his prime right now, Aaron Rodgers, most definitely deserves to have the biggest contract in NFL history. This guy has won a Super Bowl before. He's taken this team to great success over the past couple seasons. I mean, they've been ranked among the best in the NFC conference for almost a couple years now. So I see this guy Aaron Rodgers as a beast, and he could go on to be a true legend because I had another Super Bowl to capture. What do you think, Sean?
I think if you were to ask me, I think Joe Flacco does deserve to be the highest paid quarterback because, look, he is the defending he has the Lombardi Trophy. He's on the team that's the defending Super Bowl champion. He's the defending Super Bowl MVP. So he wasn't the MVP of the Super Bowl for no reason. So I even though I like what you said in Aaron Rodgers, I can see him being deserving of the award as well, or of being the highest paid player as well. But in my mind, until some team knocks off the Ravens and Joe Flacco, I think you got to give Joe Flacco his due for what he did last year.
Yeah, most definitely. I actually have a caller. 516, you're live on the air.
How you doing, guys? This is Bill from Long Island, just checking out the show for the first time on Debate Wednesday. How you guys doing?
Yeah, how's it going, Bill? Today we actually are letting our listeners get the option to initiate in their own debatable topics. So if there's anything you would like to discuss today.
Well, you were debating the topic of Joe Flacco. Can I debate the debate question? Because I don't even think it's a fair debate question because it's on paper, Joe Flacco's the highest paid football player right now. By $100,000 a year over Drew Brees, but it's really not a fair comparison because he will never see year 4 of this contract as it's written. His cap hit in the 4th year of this contract will be nearly $30 million. So there's no way in heck it's ever going to live out to what is written on paper. He'll only see $52 million over the first 3 years of it. So I think that's up for debate. As of guys that really deserve to be the highest paid, if you go right now, the only one I can think of would be Aaron Rodgers because He's in the prime of his career, and he does so much for the Green Bay Packers organization. I think Brady and Manning are just too old and too long, you know, too little too old to give like a six-year contract and have him live out to all 6 years. The only guy I would give a contract like that into the future, maybe 2 or 3 years down the line, would definitely be Andrew Luck, a guy who went through a 2-14 Colts team and took him to the playoffs. He has the skill and capacity to be a the NFL highest paid player down the line. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, well, Luck definitely has the tools in place. Obviously, as you said, you need to make sure that he can continue the success. The skill is all there. The mentality is there. The poise in the pocket is there. And really the physical tools. He's an underrated athlete, which is what a lot of people don't really talk about. But with all of that being said, I mean, I do agree. Aaron Rodgers should be the highest paid. But at the same time, when his contract expires, you know Green Bay is going to make him just that. You're right. Joe Flacco's not going to see all that money. I just was honestly surprised that they paid him so much when you have so many other priorities. Ellerby, Kruger, Bolden, and all of them walked. And quite frankly, you know, Joe Flacco is incredible, not taking anything away, but the Ravens don't make it to the Super Bowl without those three guys.
Agreed, but we're not even having this conversation if the Ravens don't have a quarterback. And reason why he cashed in was all the timing in his life. I mean, he cashed in, he pushed his chips to the middle and said, I'm an elite quarterback, and he proved it on the biggest stage. He's 28 years old. He's in his prime. He's been in the league 5 years, made it to the playoffs every year. I mean, what else can he do? I mean, in an offensive-driven league, it's proven you really don't need a good defense anymore. You just need a serviceable defense. And the way this league is progressing, there is no way you can ever win a Super Bowl from here going forward without elite-type quarterback play.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. In the same breath of without those guys, you're right. Without a quarterback, there's no conversation. And I guess, you know, you want to make sure he stays, and the only way to make sure he stays is to pay him the money he wants. So I guess I'm not as surprised that he got the money he was looking for. But in the same breath, he's not going to be the highest paid player in the NFL for very long.
Honest, nor should he be. He'll only be making $17 million a year for the next 3 years. His cap hit is very team-friendly in the next 2 years. But then again, it's just really semantics, and it sounds really nice and whatnot. But that being said, like you talked about the guys, that all the guys of the Ravens had to let go. Let's say, for instance, they signed all the guys they let go and let Joe Flacco go. You think they'd be a playoff team? Well, what they could draft or get via trade?
It's difficult to say because we always say it's a quarterback-driven league, but it may be a quarterback-driven league, but it's definitely a defensively-driven division that he plays in. Cincinnati, I think Cincinnati is going to be a better team than Baltimore next year. I think they already are. Baltimore also, we can't forget, caught the New York Giants symptom where, you know, momentum is more important than the talent on the field. And, you know, Ray Lewis conveniently announces his retirement 1 week before the playoffs, with the Ravens having lost 4 out of 5 games. And, you know, but again, you're right. You know, without Flacco making the throws that he made during the playoffs, you don't make it. But, I mean, again, it's only going to last 1 or 2 years where he's the highest paid player, because as soon as a guy like Rodgers becomes a free agent, or as soon as one of these other up-and-coming quarterbacks wants to restructure their deal, they're just going to be asking for the same money that Flacco got, and they're going to get more.
And probably deserve more.
Yeah.
Okay, well, listen, the first time listening to the show, I just wanted to chime in on that. Enjoy your night, guys.
You too.
All right, thank you, Bill. All right, another good live call there by the name of Bill. Thanks for the call, Bill. But now we have to move on. Once again, the number to the show is 646-716-5733. Once again, 646-716-5733. Now we move on to college football. Here's a nice debatable topic. who has better chances of winning the Heisman, Johnny Football or Braxton Miller? I'll start off with you, Sean.
That's not even a question or a debate for me, Julian. Hands down, in my mind, it's Johnny Manziel. I mean, nothing against Braxton Miller, but I just think if Manziel can win the award as a freshman, he can certainly win the award with as a sophomore. I mean, look what he did last year for Texas A&M, and he's coming, and as we know, he's coming back, and he, you know, even though Braxton Miller did lead Ohio State to an undefeated season, I just think right now the floor belongs to Manziel when it comes to the Heisman Trophy.
Yeah, how about you, Matt? I mean, I don't think either of those guys are going to win the Heisman next year, but if I had to pick one, I think it's obviously Manziel. I think Braxton Miller has the better chance of doing it in terms of, you know, he's playing in a Big Ten conference where, you know, we didn't see a lot of Ohio State because they were obviously suspended from bowl play, but that was an incredible team last year. And quite frankly, they're returning more people than the average good team. The issue for the difference between Texas A&M and Ohio State is actually kind of surprising because Ohio State went undefeated, and really only in their conference will there be teams that are doing anything they can to knock them off, because on the national stage they got absolutely no exposure. But if you're talking about Texas A&M, you're talking about they're playing in the best conference in football, a conference where defense rules everything, and the only focus of every single person in the SEC, the best elite conference, Alabama, LSU, et cetera, is going to be shut down Johnny Football. When you get a hit on him, hit him as hard as you can. Take him out of the game. You don't think that's a brutal reality, but it's still a reality. That's what it's going to come down to. And when it comes down to it, I don't think Johnny Football is going to replicate his season. I think he's an incredible player. He's as good as they market him to be. But when you're talking about playing in the SEC, you think that he's going to just lead this team to a cakewalk? You think that they're going to be blowing out teams again? Texas A&M came out of nowhere, and I said it to you after he won the Heisman on Sports Kingdom, and I'm going to say it again. It's a lot easier when you're sneaking up on a team than it is when they know you're coming. And now every team in the SEC, every brilliant head coach, knows that Johnny Football is coming. And if you think that they're not going to do everything they can to game plan and shut him down, you're out of your mind. He's going to have an incredible season. Texas A&M isn't going undefeated. They have the talent to do it, but they have way too big of a target on their head, and they've never experienced that before. They might have been in the spotlight last year, or so they thought, but were they really? Because I'm pretty sure the only person that was talked about was Johnny Football. Now it's all about Texas A&M. They have the top recruit in the draft class. They have all these guys coming back. But you know what? They don't have Luke Jokel. They don't have Ryan Swope. They lost just as many guys as they get back. I hope that they go on to run the table. I hope he wins his second Heisman, because it's about time we got rid of this ridiculous unwritten rule that you can't win two. But in terms of will he do it, I just don't see it. I think that he's going to have a tough time against the SEC because everyone is gunning for Johnny Football.
Well, while we're all talking about Texas A&M and Johnny Football, I might as well talk about Ohio State and Braxton Miller, okay? Braxton Miller, he's put on a lot of hard work, I can tell, over this offseason. While Johnny Manziel, believe it or not, he's been partying a lot, man. He's been partying a lot after only his first season in college football. His first season in college football led him to the Heisman Trophy, but as you look at it, they weren't undefeated, and we don't know if they're going to replicate, or we don't know, essentially, in other words, we don't know if Texas A&M is going to have an undefeated season this year under Coach Kenny Sumlin. Of course, I could tell that he brought in some excellent recruits who are going to be working now with Texas A&M. But I could tell you this much, though. If you look at Ohio State's program, okay, they're undefeated last year under Urban Urban Meyer, and they went 12-0 in spite of being banned from any sort of bowl game. I just feel, you know, Braxton Miller, he's going to be a junior next year. Who knows, man? I think he has a lot of talented abilities. So who knows? Who knows if Braxton Miller may lead into having a spectacular season? His most spectacular season over Johnny Manziel. Who knows? Now we move on to more college that has to do with college basketball. So I want to talk about this topic. What was the best moment ever in the 75-year history of March Madness? There have been, of course, a lot of moments, lots and lots of moments, but if you can name me one, Max, then what would it be, the best moment ever in the 75-year history of March Madness?
I mean, for me, I think, this had nothing to do with winning a national title, but for me, I think that, you know, in college football, I'm not a big fan of the mid-major making it into the national championship. I just feel that, you know, we've seen it time and time again. We saw it last year with Northern Illinois. The competition just isn't there. But in college basketball, I mean, you can make an argument that outside of the Big Ten and maybe the ACC, the best conference in basketball this year is the Mountain West. You have San Diego State, you have UNLV, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So for that reason, my favorite college basketball moment has to be Bryce Drew. When he hit that improbable game winner and led Valparaiso over number 4 Ole Miss, I think that was just the culmination of what college basketball is all about. And it started what we know. Obviously, we had March Madness, but it embodied March Madness. It was the team that nobody thought had a chance taking down the power. And that, to me, is what March Madness is all about. Yeah, obviously, you have the Christian Laettner shots and all of that, Michael Jordan shots. But the greatest moment for me has to be Bryce Drew, because that's what March Madness is all about. It's about the little guy taking down the big school, and there was no greater moment of that than Bryce Drew taking down Ole Miss.
How about you, Sean?
For me, I have I want to go with Michael Jordan and his game winner in the mid-80s to win North Carolina that national championship over Georgetown. For me, that's one of my favorite moments in the NCAA tournament. But also, what about Jim Valvano and that NC State team that won all the way? And then Jim Valvano having his speech, never give up speech, before he passed away. I mean, those for me are my two favorite moments. Or what about Butler? I mean, there's a lot of moments. What about Butler making back-to-back national championship appearances? That's another one.
You know, I gotta say, the early 90s of the Duke squad that Coach K assembled along with guys such as Christian Laettner, Bob Mosley, Grant Hill, I mean, that was just a spectacular squad they had on for a couple years. What more can I say about that Duke squad? Because I think truly that was one of the best squads Coach K got to ever coach. And just like Matt said, that game winner Christian Laettner had was great horse back at that. So that's mine. That's the moment I feel is the best ever in the 75-year history of March Madness. It's always going to be a mystery. It's always going to be a mystery as to why Christian Leitner never got really show himself. He truly has game, but it's always going to be a mystery. It's always going to be a mystery, though, why Christian Leitner wasn't able to show at the next level. Don't forget the Dream Team. And I remember that one scrimmage they were talking about, looking back at the Dream Team documentary, how the Duke squad came in and beat the Dream Team. So, that was, I think, very special, very special time in the team history of Duke. So now I want to stay on college basketball leading into today. People are wondering who is going to be the national college basketball player of the year, who is going to really win the John R. Wooden Award. We've heard front runners such as Oladipo, Mason Plumlee, Porter, but I got to really ask, starting off with Sean, who do you think truly deserves this award and why?
I'm going to go, as much as I could say, Mason Plumlee of Duke. You know who I'm going to go with? I got to go out on a limb, and I'm going to go with Trey Burke from Michigan. I think Trey Burke, he's the single reason that Michigan is as good as they are, and he's won a lot of games for Michigan this year. I mean, I think Trey Burke is deserving of the award. So I'm going out on a limb, and I'm going with Trey Burke.
Yeah, if you had to ask me, I truly think that right now we're seeing Duke really, really show it leading towards the end of this college basketball season. I'll tell you what, if they can do very well in the tournament this year, if they can't, if they decide not to fall down like they did against Lehigh last year in the tournament, then I have a strong feeling Mason Plumlee might have the honors of taking this award. What do you think, Max?
I think that the winner is going to be Trey Burke. And it's nothing against him when I say this, but I think that the winner, the person who deserves to win the award, is the person who should have beat him out for the Big Ten Player of the Year award, and that's Victor Oladipo. Oladipo, when he played Trey Burke on March 10th, a lot of people forget about what happened. First and foremost, Oladipo finished with 14 points and 13 rebounds as a shooting guard, might I add. Second of all, Trey Burke shot 7 of 20 from the floor. He turned the ball over 4 times, and the reason he did that is because Oladipo took it upon himself to defend Burke when it counted. Oladipo was shooting 61% from the field for the season. He's shooting 46% from three-point range for the season. I mean, the statistics are to marvel, but to me, if you're asking me who's the best player in the nation, the best player in the nation is Oladipo. It's almost like when we would watch, and I'm not comparing him to him as a professional player, but it's almost like when we would watch Michael Jordan when he was at North Carolina, and everyone was like, yeah, Michael Jordan's great, but, there are these other guys. Victor Oladipo is that type of player where every time you watch him, he dominates the player that you say is the best in the nation. He dominates the team that you say is so much better than his team. And to me, that's what it's all about. He's only averaging 13.7 points. Trey Burke is flirting with the double-double, but, who's the best player in the nation? Who's the guy who's really just been the most awe-inspiring talent. For me, that is Victor Oladipo. But again, I think Trey Burke is going to win. If it's not him, I think that the guy who really deserves it and nobody wants to talk about is Doug McDermott. He's what college basketball is all about. Honestly, I don't think he has a chance to win it because Creighton didn't achieve as we would have liked to see them. But Doug McDermott, just incredible player.
Yeah, and as we were just speaking about Trey Burke, most believe he's going to declare for the NBA draft this upcoming summer. And I got to leave you guys with a debate here, but do you think Trey Burke can become an elite point guard in the NBA if he decides to declare for the NBA draft this upcoming summer? Starting with you, Max.
100% yes. I think it's laughable whenever anyone tries to say that Michael Carter Williams is a better point guard than Trey Burke. The only advantage that Michael Carter Williams has is that he's taller. And we've seen Michael Carter Williams exposed as an all-around player over the past month or two of the college basketball season. But this isn't about NCW. It's about Trey Burke. And Trey Burke, when you watch him play, it's almost like watching Chris Paul. You know, he's so poised. Everyone looks at assist. There's a difference between getting an assist and knowing what pass to make. And that is what scouts look at when they're evaluating a point guard. They don't care if you're averaging 10 assists per game. Scott Machado was averaging 10 assists per game last year, and he's a great player, but just by comparison, let's look at that. For me, what makes Trey Burke so great is, you know, when he's running in transition, he knows when to lob it. He knows when to make a bounce pass. When he set up the half court, he knows how to come off of a screen, and he knows how hard he's supposed to hit the paint. The guy, he has the intangibles, and that's a word that's thrown around a lot, but he has everything it takes to be elite at the next level. You know, he's not a Damian Lillard-type player, but he can shoot the ball. He's not a Chris Paul-type defender, but he comes up with steals. And he's just one of those guys that, in every facet of the game, he knows what to do and when to do it. And I think as he gets older and as he progresses in his career, he will become elite, and he will be one of the stars of what should be, depending on who comes out and who stays in school, what should be an incredible draft class.
Yeah, and he's absolutely a phenomenal penetrator. I could really see him in comparison to Chris Paul now in the NBA with the Los Angeles Clippers. I want to go to you quickly, Sean, before we get to the final topic today, but what do you think? Can Trey Burke become an elite point guard in the NBA?
Yeah. Sure, why not? I mean, I like his intangibles. I like what he does on the court. I think he can become maybe similar to, maybe Chris Paul down the line. I mean, he does have a lot of potential. I like what Trey Burke brings to the table, game in and game out.
You know, I think a great team for Trey Burke, an ideal fit for Trey Burke in the NBA would be Utah Jazz. I really feel the Utah Jazz could use a phenomenal penetrator like Trey Burke.
Oh, absolutely. That to me is the ideal fit. You know, when you're drawing up a mock draft for Bleacher Report or Sheridan Hoops or wherever you do it for, you know, it's really hard to walk the line of what will happen and what should happen. But when you're doing what should happen, when you're trying to make the perfect player go to the perfect team, Trey Burke to Utah is one of those picks that it's just like, you know, Utah has needed a point guard since John Stockton. And truthfully, it's been that long since they've had one. Mo Williams, with all due respect to him, he's such an underrated player. But Mo Williams has been injured all year. So, and, you know, Alec Burks, they're trying to play him at point guard. But, you know, yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. Burke, that guy is just, he's something else, and he knows what to do, when to do it. And obviously, as he gets older and more mature as a player, he'll improve in that sense. But, Utah would be perfect.
Yeah. All right, so we got 5 minutes left, so I want to let our callers know one more time that the number to the show today is 646-716-5733. Once again, 646-716-5733. It can be on anything, and in fact, it can be on Dwight Howard, who in fact had an incredible night last night in Orlando, Florida, with 39 points, 16 rebounds, 3 blocks, 2 assists, and even 1 steal. He just came off electric last night. But, yeah, getting to our final topic today, Tim Lincecum. He's on his final year with the San Francisco Giants. Tim Lincecum, he didn't have he pretty much had the worst season of his career last year with San Fran, which led him to being booted to the Giants bullpen. Tim Lincecum, I think, has had surely incredible years with the San Francisco Giants, and I just wonder if he's going to be able to come back into that form, because Bruce Bochy went on to say the other day, but Tim Lincecum looks 100% ready to go this season. So that leads me to ask you, Sean, do you think Tim Lincecum on his contract here will capitalize, or do you think he is just once again going to have a poor season?
It's tough to say. I mean, if Bochy says Lincecum's ready to go, I mean, then you got to believe he's ready to go. I mean, the freak, people have been known to come up big in their contract years. So we'll see if that holds true with Lincecum. That remains to be seen. But if there's anybody that could come up big in a contract year pitcher-wise, especially on a team that's gone to a couple of World Series over the past few years, I think it's Tim Lincecum, no doubt in my mind.
Yeah, surely. Don't forget, like you said, Sean, right off the bat, the Giants have been the 2010 and 2012 World Series just recently last year, and also they contain a rotation with the likes of Vogelsong, Bumgarner, Matt Cain, Tim Lincecum, and without a doubt, I think they just have one of the best rotations in Major League Baseball. And if Tim Lincecum can really show it this year in his contract year with the San Francisco Giants, then I think Giants' chances could increase even more at another World Series. What would you have to say, Max?
I think Tim Lincecum is, he's one of the most interesting players in the league, because I think what happened to him last year, a lot of people are going to talk about, fundamentals, and they're going to try and talk about, the way his windup was and all this and all that. It was completely mental, and I think what a lot of people really need to do is they need to stop thinking baseball and start thinking people. And what happened to Tim Lincecum was simple. When he came into the league, he was the hot new thing, and, he never got that punch in the mouth to wake him up. He got, 2 Cy Young Awards, a World Series appearance, and he became this rock star, and he was just this untouchable player who nobody could hit. And it just seemed like last year was the first time that anyone really stepped up to the plate and was like, we figured you out. You're not untouchable. You're still a great pitcher, but you're not untouchable. And once he got roughed up, it was just downhill. And mentally, it just never seemed like he recovered. When he got into a jam, he didn't have the same poise because he lost his confidence. And, I'm not really concerned with how he is physically, because the guy stays in good shape. He's one heck of a player, one heck of an athlete. My question is, where is he mentally right now? Because if he's not back to where he was as a Cy Young pitcher from a mental standpoint, plain and simply, he's going to be in trouble.
Yeah, most definitely. You don't want to hit the market when you come off a 10 months to come. Is going to really have to really prove himself this very year. That's all the time we have. But before we go, I want to actually, in fact, bring up a quick question. But Sean, do you think USA will win the World Baseball Classic this year? Real quick, yes or no?
Yes, without a doubt. They're surging right now in the tournament. I like USA to win it over Japan in the final.
And you, Mike?
You know, I'm not going to say no, but I do think that the Dominican Republic is still the favorite.
Well, we'll see. This is all for Debate Wednesday today. I want to thank our listeners for listening. Re-listen to the show on Stitcher, iTunes, even here on Blog Talk Radio. Follow us here on Blog Talk Radio and Twitter at Sports_Kingdom. We'll be back on Saturday with a special guest from USA Today Sports. He goes by the name of Steve Gardner. We'll have him on to discuss the MLB season ahead. So I hope you guys, Max, you're welcome to join us that very day. So once again, thank you for joining, and I'm going to play out the Harlem Shake once again. Peace out, guys.